Thank you very much for the introduction, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak here. It's a big pleasure to interact with so many great and speak in front of such so many great physicists and mathematicians. I will tell you about the recent work with Yan, Yaping, and Gufang, mostly also related to the previous work I've done with Davide and Tomáš Procházka. And you can view my talk from different perspectives. You can view it as a physicist's point of view on the cohomological Hall algebra and on many quivers that were drawn throughout the conference before. You can view my talk as kind of series of conjectures coming from physics or dual picture that we have developed with Davide. You can also look at it as a physicist version of the propaganda started stated in the previous talk by Ben a couple of days ago. And you can also view it as a generalization promised by Davide in Davide's talk when he reviewed AGT correspondence and what should be the relation between AGT and cohomological Hall algebra. So let me come back to Davide's talk and review some parts of his story and tell you how the cohomological Hall algebra, or how I think about cohomological Hall algebra related to the standard AGT. So AGT is a correspondence between conformal field theories and vertex operator algebras on one side and four-dimensional gauge theories on the other side. And a prototypical example is a relation between W and algebras depending on a continuous parameter psi on one side and gauge theories with gauge group UN on C2 in the presence of omega background, where these are the omega background parameters, or in the math language, equivalent parameters for the C star, for the two obvious C star actions on C2. So this correspondence can be made very concrete. In the math literature, people usually, I should also tell you what's the relation between the parameter psi here and the parameters epsilon on this other side. And there's this well-known relation that they are related as follows. So this correspondence can be made very concrete both on mathematics side and also on the physics side. In mathematics, people usually talk about the natural geometric actions of these W algebras on equivariant cohomology of moduli space of instantons on this C2. And in the physics, people study a relation between conformal blocks for these WN algebras and their relation to natural objects on the gauge theory side called Nekrasov partition function. Okay, let me review the picture that was reviewed already in the talk by Davide that motivates this relation between W algebras and gauge theories, and that most of the physicists have in mind when speaking about AGT. And then that will naturally lead to the generalization later on. So Davide told us that the idea behind AGT is considering a stack of n M5 brains wrapping a torus times C2 in the presence of omega background, where I label the number of n, a number of n fire brains by an integer standing in front of the four cycle here. And to study the relation between cohomological Hall algebra and AGT, it's convenient to compactify on the circle of this torus to get a configuration of n d4 brains on a line times RC2 times RC2. And the motivation behind the AGT is can be motivated by looking at the same system either from the perspective of this two-dimensional system that naturally leads to the W algebra side, or from the perspective of this 4D system that naturally leads to the gauge theory side. So let me now tell you how to think about the instantons, how the Acuran cohomology of moduli spaces of instantons appear naturally, and how all those quivers that appear throughout the conference can be obtained from the physics perspective. So there's a well-known ADHM construction of moduli space of instantons on C2 in terms of representations of some quiver. And from the physics perspective, this quiver comes from consideration of bound state of D0 brains and D0 brains and D4 brains that have been already reviewed also in one of the previous talks. So the configurations we are interested in look as follows. And the corresponding ADHM quiver can be understood from the physics perspective, or derived from the physics perspective, as a quiver associated to the gauge theory, gauge quantum mechanics living on the D0 brains, with the node of the quiver being the gauge theory node. The two loops corresponding to the two complex combination of hypermultiplet associated with the motion of the D0 brains along the C2. And the framing node with the corresponding I's and J's here, associated with a string stretched between D0 brains and D4 brains. It turns out that many calculations in gauge theory reduce to integration to sums over equivalent cohomology of the moduli space of representations of the representations of this quiver subject to the ADHM equations. And this is how physicists can arrive kind of heuristically on the right-hand side of the AGT relation. Now, we want to construct an action of W algebra on this Acuran cohomology of such a moduli space, and identify the corresponding module with the highest weight module for this W algebra. W algebra is going to, I should also tell you what the number n here means. So this is the instanton number. And from the vertex operator algebra point of view, this can be identified with conformal weight of the corresponding state in a given module. Okay, and W algebra raises or increases or decreases this instanton number, and is thus naturally associated with processes of adding n d0 brains to the bound state of m d0 brains to d4 brains, leading to a configuration of n plus m d0 brains bound to n d4 brains. Moreover, to reproduce the structure, the algebra structure of the W algebra, one also wants to understand the multiplication coming from considering n d0 brains fusing with m d0 brains. So as discussed in the talk of as discussed in the talk of Jan, one of the original motivations for cohomological algebra is to understand exactly these kind of processes. And it is natural to implement the cohomological whole algebra associated with the corresponding quivers to construct both this action on the moduli space of instantons and also the algebraic relations of the associated with D0 brains, the dynamics of D0 brains. And without being precise, because we've seen all the details in the previous talks, we have the natural cohomological whole algebra multiplication on the equivalent cohomology of the representations for these quivers. That is going to lead to the WN algebras. And we have similarly the action on the framed quivers. Okay, now let me review briefly what Shipman and Wassrow did and what we later on did for the spiked instantons, because everything is pretty much parallel. You just need to add a bunch of loops and make sure that everything's going to everything will go through. So as you can see from this diagram, adding ND zero brains is going to increase the instanton number. But I've told you the instanton number is related to the conformal weight of the corresponding state in the representation of the W algebra. And this one can be also decreased by some of the generators of the WN algebra. So clearly we are missing half of the algebra, which correspond to the negative modes, the lowering modes. So in order to reproduce the full WN algebra, one need to take a double of the cohomological whole algebra that can be identified, and that has been done, for example, in this Shipman and Wassrow paper, maybe even before, with an affine Youngian of GL1 hat, affine Youngian of GL1. And one can also show that the action of the full affine Youngian of GL1 acts on the equivalent cohomology of this framed quiver. Another thing done in the Shipman-Wassrod paper is that one can actually identify this action with an action of WN algebra, which is an algebra appearing that appeared, for example, in the previous talk, an algebra strongly generated by by field of conformal weight 1, 2, blah, 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 up to n. And the module can be identified with a generic highest weight module or a Verma module, that is an induced module of a one-dimensional representation for the positive half of the algebra generated by the vector that is annihilated by the positive modes, and on which the zero mode act by a number which is a linear function of these mu i's. I will tell you what the mu i's are in a second. And the corresponding module is just a induced module for the full algebra of this mu i.
So how do you see this identification? Do you identify the W algebra from the Kolha? Do you go through the
same? So I will tell you how it works for the more general or I will sketch how it works for the more general setup of Spikenstantons, Stantons, because this is the new thing. But generally, what do you want to do? there exists a natural free field realization coming from composition of copper. So firstly, if the framing is one, it's very easy to identify free field realization as the Fock module, the module with a Fock module of Heisenberg algebra, If the n is bigger, it actually turns out that there exists this hyperbolic localization functor that maps this moduli space into a tensor product of moduli spaces of n's, n of them, so n Fock modules. And it is compatible with this twisted coproduct of Schiffman and Wassersohn. So there exists a twisted coproduct that is compatible under this action. You can compose this coproduct with this free field realization on each of the n Fock representations, and you'll get a free field realization. The comparison that can be then done, which is really just sitting down and comparing that the two free field realizations are the same, that the vertex operator algebra free field realization is the same as coming from this coproduct composed with the free field realization on the simple factors. I will comment on that again slightly slowly once I get to the more complicated Spikenstanton case. Okay. So I introduced a bunch of parameters. There are those epsilons and there are also those mu's. So let me tell you what is their origin. The highest weights mu's. So there are various C star actions with that we treat equivariantly in the full story, and the different mu's and epsilons are equivalent parameters associated with these C star actions. So as I've already told you, there are these epsilon one and epsilon two associated with C star two naturally acting on the space time C two, and there are those mu i's that correspond to the Cartan generators. Of the GLN, of the GLN group that acts on this framing node of the quiver, yeah, and they just appear as the parameters as the highest weight of the modules. Okay, so this is the standard story of Schiffman-Wassersohn and standard AGT from slightly mass perspective, reviewed in terms of diagrams and pictures. Let me tell you how all of that generalizes to the case of spiked instantons. That was also advertised in David's talk. Okay. So starting with the 3D propaganda, let me embed the C2 inside C3. To C3, one can associate a 3D coha. Associated with the following quiver. And the story seems kind of boring at this point because you can just dimensionally reduce, as we were told by Jan. To get a 2D coha. And this 2D coha is going to act on the corresponding equivalent cohomology of moduli space that is the same in this case. So at the first sight, the configuration seems kind of boring, or this embedding seems to be kind of boring. But not if one realizes that there are actually three different ways how to embed this C2 inside C3 that are consistent with the two C star actions rotating the coordinates of C3. So the configuration that I have in mind is the configuration investigated recently by Nekrasov. He called them and where he called the corresponding moduli space the moduli space of spiked instantons. Then it's associated to the four brains, wrapping the three possible four cycles inside C3, or N1, C12, the three coordinate planes, N2, C13, and N3, C12. And from some string theory arguments, he derived, along the lines of the standard ADHM construction, a framed quiver associated to this configuration, with the potential that we have seen, I think, in Gufang's talk and maybe some other talks as well. And indeed, there is a natural action of the cohomological algebra on the corresponding moduli space as before. And furthermore, you can see that there are going to be the equivalent parameters epsilon 1, epsilon 2, epsilon 3 associated to the three actions, C star actions on C3, where we are going to restrict only to the combination preserving the volume form of the Calabi-Yau threefold. And furthermore, there are now three copies of the Cartan generators associated to the three different framings with parameters, with N2 parameters, mu I2, N1 parameters, mu 1i, and N3 parameters, mu 3i. And analogously to the previous AGT and Shipman-Wasserow story, you can identify the corresponding vertex. So one can again take the double of the cohomological algebra, obtain affine Jungian of GL1 hat, extend the action of the affine Jungian of GL1 hat on the corresponding equivalent cohomology of the moduli space, and identify it, something that I'll comment on later, the action with an action of algebra we found with Davide, Yn1, N2, N3, psi. Which is some kind of generalization of the Wn algebras. And you can think of it, for example, as an algebra non that is non-freely generated by fields of spin 1, 2, and so on, up to n1 plus 1, n2 plus 1, n3 plus 1, minus 1. Acting again on a highest weight module. No, these are just the generators. This is the list of generators.
How many of them are there?
There's N1. So there's N1 times 1. You know, this is product. This is product.
Right, so they're arranged in the cubical pattern. So it's
That's right. Yeah. But the algebra is also non-free generated. There are some extra relations that are hard to describe, at least in this picture. But I'm going to give you an explicit construction and definition in the next section.
Psi is the same as before?
Psi is, again, the ratio of the two epsilons. That's right. So psi is or 1 over. That's right. OK, so let me tell you roughly what the module is. So it is acting on again, induced module from the one-dimensional module of the positive half of the algebra, parameterized by n1 plus n2 plus n3 complex numbers. So there's n1 plus n2 plus n3 numbers. defined, parameterizing the eigenvalues with respect to the zero modes. But these guys are now pretty complicated functions that carve out n1 plus n2 plus n3 dimensional subvariety inside C n1 plus 1, n2 plus 1, n3 plus 1, minus 1. It's kind of funny because, like, in the vertex operator algebra literature, people are constructing those different extensions of W algebras, and they are getting these solutions corresponding to non-free generated algebras of this form. And then they ask, okay, what are the possible highest weights consistent with the relations imposed on the W algebras? And they're getting those, like, more very complicated varieties of highest weights, or I don't know how they call them. It just turns out that in this picture, they are very nicely and very easily parameterized as these subvarieties inside this space. So I was quite happy when I discovered this fact. And let me now actually give you a precise definition of the W algebras in terms of a subalgebra of free bosons. So there's probably 2 years history or 3 years history of free federalization of these kind of algebras. First of them appeared already in papers by Fagin and Morzon and Bernstein, and later on Litvinov and Spodinenko. And inspired by them, we found a generalization with Tomáš. We found a generalization of Miura transform, which is a well-known construction for WN algebras. That can be actually generalized also for these YN1, N2, and N3 algebras, and give a nice way to define them as a subalgebras of free bosons, of Heisenberg algebras. So I will now tell you how to explicitly realize these algebras, YN1, N2, N3, as a subalgebras of a tensor product of N1 plus N2 plus N3 Heisenberg algebras, where each of them have a color 1, 2, or 3. You just think of each of such free boson to being associated to a single D4 brain in this picture. And you can see that there are three possible orientations of the D4 brain, and that's why three possible colorings of the Heisenberg algebra. And the Heisenberg algebra is just an algebra satisfying the following commutation relations. It's convenient to normalize the generators as follows. Where the h here gives you a color of the ith free boson or ith Heisenberg element. So this is the color. Written in more physics-y way in terms of field, one can define the generating function of the following form and write down the commutation relations in terms of operator product expansion. Minus h kappa I, h1, h2, h3, 1 over z minus w squared. And recover the commutation relations by taking some contour integrals on the right-hand side. This is standard way how to encode the commutation relations of the modes. And it will be convenient to introduce free bosons. They're going to be objects with the following OPE, with the logarithmic OPE. Such that the generators Ji can be written as derivatives of the free fields. So you can see that you can almost immediately see that if you take derivatives of this expression, you'll exactly recover the OPE of the J generators. Okay, so now we are getting slowly to the definition of the Y N1, N2, N3 algebra. And for that, let me define the following Miura factors. We found a formula, pretty ugly formula, in our recent paper with Tomáš Procházka. It was later shown by Litvinov that it can be actually written in much more compact form. So for each free boson or free Heisenberg algebra of a given color, we can define the following pseudo-differential operator by taking exponential of h kappa I phi I h3 derivative of to the power of h kappa I over h3 and exponential of the same factor with plus sign. These are going to
is either kappa the same? You said
no.
Is a color.
So the sum line.
No.
So
oh yeah, yeah, sure. So this I is different I. I should probably write J, sorry. So this is J, exactly. I'm sorry. Okay.
Does J have something to do with the color or no? Is it just a number?
G, you mean the kappa here?
Yes.
So this kappa. Mm-hmm.
Kappa is a color and G is just a number.
G, where is G?
L7.
J, yes, it's a number. So I should tell you that's right. So J labels the free bosons. So J goes from 1 to N1 plus N2 plus N3. And N1 of such free bosons have color 1, N2 have color 2, and N3 have color 3. And the color is encoded in kappa I. Make sense? Okay. Right, so let me define these pseudo-differential operators. Let me now give you two examples that you can actually recover the standard Miura Miura factor by considering Li for kappa I being free. One can rewrite, so here you can see that there's just a power one, and you can commute the exponential to the right and recover h3 times derivative plus jiz, where the jiz comes from the action of the derivative on the exponential. And in general, if you consider, say, kappa I being one, you'll get a much more complicated expression. And let me just write first two terms. And infinitely many other contributions. And now let me define, finally, this algebra YN1N2N3 as a subalgebra of these three bosons by taking product of all such operators that I defined here and expressing them as a sum over k going from 0 to infinity of ukz. Over h3 minus k, where these guys are just normal ordered products of derivatives of the free bosonic fields. And they generate the algebra y and 1 and 2 and 3. Conjecturally, it doesn't matter. We have done some checks. Yeah, I should warn you, many things I'm saying here are conjectural to a large extent. Okay, so now I gave you a free federalization. You can just sit down, take these products of these factors, and recover these U's and find the W algebras that I'm talking about. And you can also sit down and compare with the free federalization that was suggested, that Gufang was talking about. So let me give you a small reminder of Gufang's talk. So he defined this central extension of the affine angin of GL1. And he said that there exists a coproduct that you can take n1 times n1 plus n2 plus n3 times. This is the twisted coproduct, not the thing he called Drinfeld coproduct. This algebra naturally acts on the equivalent cohomology of the moduli space that I think he denoted as V N1, N2, N3. And there exists this hyperbolic localization map that allows us to identify the moduli space with a tensor product of simpler moduli spaces of the following form. And due to the work of previous people before us, the action of each SHC factor on each this simple module can be identified as an action of Heisenberg algebra on the Fock space. And composing this coproduct with this free federalization on each of the n1 plus n2 and n3 factors one can write down explicitly the generators of the Fanny-Anguian and just compare with the free field realization from this definition. So the comparison of the W algebras with the algebras coming from the geometric action is just a matter of calculation. Okay.
What was the motivation for this definition?
So, the main motivation is that the original way how we defined the algebras with Davide was in terms of some somehow gauge theory motivated BRST reductions. It's very hard to work with BRST reductions if you really want to sit down and do calculations, compute OPs, blah, blah, blah. You can do it in some simple examples, but it's quite hard in general. So we wanted a free field, and there were suggestions that there should exist free field realization of these algebras. And we were just trying to understand them and came up with this cute way to construct them. It turned out to be very essential for doing this comparison. Without knowing the free field realization, I wouldn't be able to do the comparison with the algebras we constructed from the geometric action. So that's another motivation. And finally, the final motivation is related to the gluing, because it turns out that the free field realization, at least in some simple examples, is very useful to be able to write down explicitly algebras associated to more complicated toric Calabi-Yau free folds, something that I'm going to talk about next. So I feel that these are the three main motivations for me. There might be more. And another thing, okay, and another important motivation was exactly the thing that I already mentioned. You can ask what are the highest weight modules of the corresponding vertex spread algebras. In general, the algebras are non-freely generated by some primary fields, as I told you. And there is a huge literature where people were trying to, example by example, compute what are the allowed highest weights. It seems like a lot, like very messy and very, very weird. On the other hand, from the gauge theory, picture, it was kind of clear from the first sight, that the modules, there should be a natural class of modules parameterized by C n1 plus n2 plus n3. But it wasn't obvious how to get all of them from the BRST reduction. And it wasn't obvious like how come that the highest weights are parameterized so simply, because the equations that people were getting, the vertex of Raja people were getting, were just too complicated. So when I was trying to resolve this puzzle, I was like naturally led to consider the free federalizations. So that's another motivation to understand the highest weight modules that are quite mysterious from other perspectives.
Is there any way of seeing how this becomes the usual?
Yes. Well, absolutely. There's one ugly thing about the Mira transform, the definition that I told you about, is that it breaks the triality symmetry. All the picture is invariant under this triality symmetry that roughly renames the different C's inside C3. Here, I break the triality covariance by roughly this H3 here in this exponent. But if you consider the algebras, associated to N1 equals 0, N2 equals 0, and N3 equals N, then the Mira transform, the factor, the Mira transformation factor becomes simply the standard Mira transformation factor. You can take product n of them, commute the corresponding derivatives, and you'll get the standard free field realization, or thing that vertex operator algebra people call Mira transformation.
How about this? you were talking about pseudo-differential operators.
Yes.
Is that perhaps the power of this del is not an integer?
Well, so that's right.
If them are equal to zero, this whole thing will be an integer.
No. So you are kind of asking what happens if I take n1 equals n, n2 equals n3 equals 0. In that case, it's...
No, I didn't tell you said that.
Yes. This is kind of mysterious, but it seems to work out. It just, it has something to do with, like, a bad way of looking at the same algebra. But, yeah, it will contain infinitely many factors, but all of them are going to be normal order products of derivatives of a single free boson. So in total, the full algebra is just going to be free boson, just written in terms of like ugly set of generators.
Thank you.
Yeah, how we came up with this formula actually is that you can write down. So all these algebras are quotients or truncations of W1 plus infinity. And you can write down W1 plus infinity algebra in terms of generators and relations. And then you can, like, these different truncations look very differently in terms of the parameters of these W1 plus infinity. And if you just try to reproduce the algebra with, like, correct parameters and try to realize in terms of single free boson, you are naturally led to the expressions of the following form. So there's actually a quite natural way how to arrive at this Mira factors. But at first sight, they indeed do quite mysterious. OK, so let me, in the last 15 minutes, discuss a bit of gluing that have been discussed in much greater generality in Thomas' talk. But let me at least tell you how to glue in terms of free fields, and at least in some examples. And examples are going to be the familiar toric free folds. So the toric free folds are labeled by a toric diagram. And there's associated cohomological whole algebra. It's double, whatever. And the corresponding module is always going to be labeled by integers assigned to each face of the diagram. Because each face of the diagram, of the toric diagram, can be identified with one smooth component fixed under toric action of the corresponding toric Calabi-Yau free fold. This picture is actually dual to the corner. Dual to the PQ web story and corner setup that I don't have time to talk about very much, but I just wanted to make this comment. And let me now tell you how, in principle, I should also tell you how, what happens in the simplest case when we have the C3. So when we have C3, the corresponding toric diagram has the following form. There are three faces, and the three faces are indeed related to the three smooth components of the divisors that the divisor that we had. Okay, so let me give you two explicit examples of gluing in terms of free fields. So similarly, as in Thomas's talk, gluing is going to be an extension of vertex operator algebras associated to vertices, where the things associated to the vertices are exactly the Y algebras that I talked about so far. So there is going to be two copies of Ys, extended by some extra generators here. And the power of the free field realization is that, at least in some examples, I can very explicitly write down formulas for the things that need to be added. And the things that need to be added are just going to be exponentials of these phis, or possibly their descendants. So one can, at least in a large class of example, construct these glued algebras really very explicitly. And to illustrate this gluing in two simple examples, and maybe give you some fun conjectures, let me discuss two examples. One of them corresponding to the following toric diagram with a single one associated to this face. So as I told you, one should take two copies of the Y algebras at the two corners. Each of them correspond. This is the conifold, yeah. Sure. So I'm just going to tell you the geometric analog of the story, the conjecture that I have, that the corresponding module for this algebra that I'm going to talk about right now should come from an action of the cohomological whole algebra of the resolved conifold. On a frame representation associated to the O minus one bundle over P1. And what is the vertex operator algebra? It's going to be an extension of two Heisenberg algebras at the two corners by an exponential vertex operator whose form can be read off directly from the toric diagram. So everything is kind of simple to see at the level of diagrams. And one can actually see the corresponding vertex operator algebra is something known as bosonization of the free fermion algebra times a Heisenberg factor. Yeah.
Miroslav, So in the case of SH, SH is only related to a spherical part of
yes.
the full core. So in that case, what should be the corresponding spherical part?
So the same story. I don't know how to define it geometrically, but if you have a quiver description, something that you have in this case, the corresponding quiver is of the following form. You can take the spherical subalgebra. It's going to be subalgebra generated by these two.
Meter is the Chirac and the Hilbert scheme of points of this surface, is that right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, such actions have been studied, surely.
Probably. So have people constructed that?
Can you repeat the question? I was asking if the Chirac and the Hilbert scheme of points of that surface.
So have people constructed, for example, action of this algebra?
People on the Hilbert scheme?
Yeah.
Academia, Gorovsky stuff on
sure.
surfaces.
Okay.
I don't know.
Maybe. Anyway, I'm going to give you a slightly less trivial example.
Maybe for this quiver, you don't have those groups. You cannot do the dimension reduction. The resolve the conifold, right?
This is a conifold quiver.
That's another case.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. So, yeah, true. I'm sorry. So the quiver should be something like this.
Right, so in this case, it's not known to be the Nakajima's
no?
story.
Is there a potential also in this picture?
There is a potential. It's not cubic, right? It's something like... Yeah, it's a Klebanov-Witten quiver. So there's the potential, I don't know, AB, A bar, B bar. And the potential is something like A bar V bar, something like that, and maybe one more term, plus or minus.
So Miro, just to interpret this frame graph associated, that total space is a blow-up of the affine plane at the origin. Are you saying that there's some space of frame sheaves on that surface that should receive an action?
Yeah, something like that. Sure. I don't know what to say. I don't know. Can you comment? Yeah, I think you should, at this stage, you should view everything I'm saying about gluing as kind of motivation. That there are like pretty rich structures that should appear somehow naturally from the geometry I expect. And there are indeed many details missing. Exactly. So, for example, you mean GL11 Kac-Moody algebra, if I see? Of Kevin Stock. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, right. So, like my conjecture for all the. Okay. So, one conjecture that I have is that all the. All the vertex separated algebras associated to this quiver should be quotients of shifted affine Youngian of GL1/1. In general, what Kevin was talking about, yeah, and by the way, the shift is the shift being an intersection number of the divisor with the P1. And the more general story sketched by Kevin should be also relevant in this case. He was considering these like bunch of brains here, bunch of brains here, possibly somehow rearranged corresponding to different choice of the roots of the super algebra. You can associate n's to each of the faces. And then the corresponding conjecture would be again that the corresponding W algebra is a quotient blah 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 of affine Youngian, shifted affine Youngian of GL n m, where there's n d5 brain ending on the left and m d5 brain ending on the right, and the shifts are again given by the intersection number of the divisor with the p1s associated with the finite segments here. Then there are also these conifold transitions, where if you do this, or if you do these transitions, basically, if you move these d5 brains, you're going to get isomorphic algebras up to some free fields that should exactly correspond to the theorems and rated and conjectures and so on in the Thomas's talk. So everything here seems to be intertwined. Anyway, I wanted to give you one more example for which I don't really have time. So let me conclude with a bunch of questions. So it would be interesting to fully understand the theory of gluing, something that Thomas is working on. So it will be extremely interesting and exciting to generalize the 3D story, the story of C3 to this more general PQ web vertex operator algebras. In particular, understand the relation between the geometry, Weaver descriptions, the corresponding cohomological Hall algebra, how to do the differential double to produce the Youngian, study its framed representations, construct an analog of the twisted coproduct, and finally compare with the huge number of conjectures that we have from the vertex operator algebra point of view. So comparison. And finally, as I mentioned, there are other definitions of the vertex operator algebras in terms of BRST reduction or this Drinfeld Sokolov reduction or quotients of W infinity algebras, and it'd be nice to explore the relation of those with the free federalization. So, and the main objection of my talk, just to fully conclude, was the physics. Propaganda. For 3D Koha. Because it actually turns out to be very closely and interestingly related to the relation between W algebras associated to divisors. In Calabi of free folds. And thank you very much for listening.
So Negutze is a way to describe W algebras by using a shuffle algebra presentation of the quantum toroidal GL1. At least in the deformer case.
Mm-hmm.
So can you use that to give an interpretation of this gluing from the shuffle algebra point of view?
Could be, and I have no idea. I don't know very much about his story, so okay. Yeah.
I have another question. So also Negutze introduced this W algebra associated with the surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the relation with the vertex algebra deformer, do you know?
Well, I think he was giving a lecture here, right? And he constructed something that I would say, oh. So firstly, the vertex algebra of a corner are actually slightly more complicated objects in the sense that they contain more smooth components. So I don't expect that he's getting all the vertex algebra at the corner. He definitely has the WN algebras and possibly some more complicated algebras associated to more complicated surfaces. And yeah, I don't actually know if. Yeah, I would.
If you have a surface,
yes.
This is.
Sure.
Cannot renew. That's the whole point. Yeah, but if the toric theorem.
No,
two dimensions
different from
C. Okay, I don't want to start any discussion. I agree with you. That's fine.
So the usual, like old AGT was coming from six-dimensional theory.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gauge group floating around.
Yes.
So how can one see this from that point?
Yeah. So here, all the gauge groups are specialized to GLN.
Okay.
There might be generalization associated to more complicated gauge groups, but I'm not sure. There might be some like. Yeah. So the standard AGT was related to the picture, the original picture that I was talking about, where you have the M fibrains on C2 times some Riemann surface. When you do when you compactify on the Riemann surface, you'll get some gauge theory with gauge loop GLN. What I'm doing right now, I just consider the whole setup to be embedded in like more dimensions. So I'll go to like M theory, embed this guy into T star sigma, and embed this guy into C3. Maybe one extra S1. And I consider more complicated configurations here, where the different stacks of M5 brains intersect. So from the gauge theory point of view, this is going to be a system of four gauge series of GL N1, N2, and N3 gauge groups that mutually interact along the intersection, along the C2s. So this is the story that I have. My guess is that if you want to do it for other gauge groups, there might be some problems with doing it in supersymmetric way to introduce the coupling. Or
algebras in the corner exist
yes.
for autosymplectic.
Yes, that's right. So vertex operator algebras in the corner work also for autosymplectic case. There should be an analogous story. So there's this that should be related to quotients of W infinity, like even W infinity, where you like take an orbifold with respect to like the even generators, and the corresponding W algebras are quotients of this even version of W infinity. So there seems to be a relation, a construction for the orthosymplectic groups as well. But in general,
I mean, is there any generalization of of the core, the relation between core high and instant
problem with
quivers
use GLM or light?
It comes more or less like parabolic induction. Core high is about parabolic induction for GLM. You can have Levy subgroup. So like this is not exactly an algebra, but some algebra-like structure. For any type of Levy, you can do some multiplication which doesn't go farther, but it's from A to B to C. From the tensor product of this and this, the bigger one. Now I can do something for other series. Perhaps.
So to get the shift of the Young, you need to specify a co-corrector. And so the co-weight, the co-weight lattice is the co-weights of GLN slash M plus one more thing.
Yes.
And you've told me the co-weight of GLN slash M. How do I get the one more, the one associated like these zero brains?
I don't know. Don't know. Good answer.
I mean, because if you shifted Yangian, it's like a Yangian, but you have some kind of zeros in the series expansion.
Could I just clarify some more basic points? Like, what in these generalizations, like, what's the strategy to actually define the vertex algebra? So, like, this kind of procedure where you double the koha and then you like look for the algebra of modes as somehow sitting inside of there, like. If I understand correctly, that's like roughly what you did in the.
So are you talking about the free federalization definition,
I mean,
or
example, I assume that
so in the free federalization we just.
I mean, even just if you could tell me any definition that would allow you to assign to one of these pictures, I guess the gluing—that's what you're going to tell me. You know what the corner is, and then you glue or something in general. Mm-hmm.
So there is a huge class of gluing that were that was made precise. Exactly by Thomas.
Right.
The way I look at it is really by extension of some exponential, these exponential vertex operators. It can be done very concretely, as I did it here in some examples. But generally, there are many, many problems. So at the level of free federalization, what I would be doing, I would construct the free federalization of the two guys and try to see what are the things that need to be added in terms of those exponentials. The problem is that if you consider more complicated configurations.
Could you say more? What exactly was the procedure here? I don't think I understood that.
How I get this one?
Yeah, like what you.
So.
Did, like what?
Yeah. So, we knew what should be. What should be the different charges and highest weights of the corresponding modules associated to for the two algebras at the corner. Associated to the line supported on this interface, line operator supported on this interface. This is something that we knew quite naturally from the BRST definition of the algebra. And we are just trying to identify what would be the exponential with the correct charges. what would be the corresponding modules that need to be added that have correct highest weights with respect to the two W algebras. And we found that they have actually always this very nice and simple simple form. But sometimes there's more of them, and we don't really fully understand like how the story works. And it seems that sometimes you also need to like include some contour integrals of screening charges and so on to reproduce the correct OPEs. And the story seems to be much more complicated. But basically the procedure that we were doing is really starting with these two and try to extend it by some exponentials with the correct charges. And then everything made sense. And we compared a bunch of examples that agrees with our expectations from BRST reductions, because we can, for example, this one can be identified with a coset of GL1 together with some free fermions over GL1. So,
can you like just?
Yeah, is it correct? No, it's incorrect. So it's just this thing. Sorry. Like immediately, like you can see from the boundary conditions and equals superangulars, this should be the algebra. And indeed, if you do this gluing, you'll get the algebra. Another big.
If you know this though, can I just ask? Can you then see that the algebra of modes of this is sitting inside of the doubled koha, like in analogy with your?
Well, not really, because I don't really know like what the doubled koha in this case is. So that's like kind of research in progress.
Or something.
Yeah.
Is that the expectation though? Do I?
That is the expectation. So the expectation is everything is going to go through in the same way as in the C3 case. There should be cohomological algebra. It should naturally act on the framed quiver. There exists probably a unique way to form a double of the cohomological algebra that is consistent with the action that can be extended to the action of the full on the frame on the representation of the frame quiver, and you can just do the similar kind of comparison as we did in the C3 case, and recover all the vertex free algebras here. So that's like the naive way to proceed.
Right, sorry,